Welcome back to Life Sculptors Podcast, episode 3, where we help your life take shape. Again, I'm your host, Dante Poole. I'm so glad to be here with you today. We are entering into the second part of our last conversation. When things aren't going right, go left. You know, we're having a conversation about what do we do when things don't go right. We read this book by Mark Colagiovanni called When Things Don't Go Right, Go Left. And, you know, we started our conversation saying, yeah, we give going left a bad rap. Like, things going right are an issue of expectations and not necessarily one of morality. You are not at the mercy of your feelings or your thoughts. And if you don't direct them, they will direct you. And so changing directions in your thinking can make the world of a difference. And so sometimes you just have to put down some things, put down some baggage that you've been carrying in order to get to a fresh perspective. We talked about worries, like how we rehearse negative outcomes in our mind, how worry is self-harassment, right? Because we just keep at it with ourselves. It impedes our vision and our ability to see clearly. But also we talked about doubts, and doubts are to question our own ability, our own truth, our own trustworthiness, and that of others. And it stifles our momentum in the direction of hope and accomplishment. But when we put down our doubts and we put down our worries, then we can begin to see clearly. I love the character in this book, and I'm going to read just a couple of pages just to kind of help give some perspective to the conversation. And so he's already put down his worries. He's put down his doubts, and here's where he picks up. I forged on until I came to a pool and a diving board I remembered all too well. The last time I tried to dive off that diving board, I splatted on my back. Ouch. I remembered the pain and how scared I was. I started thinking, maybe I shouldn't try this again. So you know what I did? I left behind my fears. Yup, I left them right there on the ground. And they screamed, "Don't do it." But I climbed that ladder, right? He climbed the ladder. He stood up straight, shoulders back, hands pressed above his head. "Stop," they cried. But I simply turned and gave them a wink. And I leapt, splat, on my back once again. Oh, that stings. I thought to myself, this is impossible. I can't be done. So you know what I did? I left my frustration. Yep, I left them right there on the ground. And they yelled, "You can't do it." Again, I stood up straight. Shoulders back, hands pressed together over my head. They laughed. "Give it up already." I whispered to myself, "No way, never." I leapt, feet together, toes pointed, legs straight, perfect. I did it. I started to realize the more I went left, the more right I felt. Oh, man. So it's interesting, this word, forged. He says, I forged on. It means to press on. It means to go gradually and steadily towards something. Like, there's some intentionality in this character's effort to go towards something better. But I tell you, when you make a decision to change the direction of your life, you are guaranteed to come into contact, come across something that is familiar from your past. Yep. Beneath the surface of worries and doubts are your fears. Our fears are so familiar to us. See, what's interesting about fears is fears are contained in our memories. Yes, fears are contained in our memories and they hold our possibilities hostage. Man, so fear then, it's anticipatory and avoidant. It's when we are afraid of what could happen based on past experience or what will happen or is happening or what may not happen yet. Fear. It's not based in fantasy. It's not based in what ifs. It's based in a real threat, a real danger. And it triggers our body to respond in certain ways because it's getting us ready for unexpected or adverse situations. The emotion of fear is really a response to this kind of thinking. I wonder if I can cope with what's happening. Man, like this emotion right here, this one speaks most loudly to our self-worth. It's the one in the driving force behind most of our dysfunctions. I want to just highlight three kinds of fears in this conversation. One, the fear of failure. Now, the fear of failure is interesting because it is based on performance. It means that we base our worth on the ability to perform a certain way and the opinions of other people. I want to tell you that your self-worth has to come from someplace other than your performance. Because we perform well some days and not well some other days. And so our self-worth could be on a roller coaster. And many of ours are. Our worth is tied to who we are, though, not what we do. And your mistakes, your mishaps, your intentional bad decisions, like sometimes we just got to admit, like I made that bad decision on purpose. That wasn't really a mistake. That was me just being me. Yeah, that part. When we make those decisions, they don't decrease our worthiness. They don't decrease our value. It's just what it means to be human. That's all. So there's the fear of failure. And when we stop believing the lie that we're only as valuable when we're doing something that matters to someone else, that's going to take us to a whole nother place. So we got this fear of failure, but we also have this fear of rejection, right? And the fear of rejection is like, it's our attempt to please others at any cost. It's us being overly sensitive to criticisms. It's withdrawing from others so that we avoid their disapproval. Y'all, the acceptance of unhealthy people cannot be the measuring stick of your worth. Hashtag, there's nothing wrong with you. Okay, so then that brings us to the third one, and this is the fear of punishment, right? And so the fear of failure is driven by performance. The fear of rejection is driven by relationship, but the fear of punishment is driven by guilt. See, when we are guilty or when others are guilty, right, we want punishment. Oh, man, there's this thinking that says that when we make mistakes— but when people make mistakes, they deserve punishment. And what's crazy is we think that about ourselves too. And so we'll go about the business of punishment because we think that punishment brings correction. But we have a whole penal system set up that's called the correctional facilities and correctional system, but it doesn't really bring correction because punishment never corrects. And because it doesn't, what happens is we begin to blame. We blame others for our own personal failures. And I'm telling you, we will use punishment to try to control others or to try to get them to comply with what we want. Fear of failure, fear of rejection, fear of punishment. So what does this look like in our everyday lives? Here are some examples. Perfectionism, like that desperate attempt to avoid low self-esteem at the hands of failure, right? Oh, I got to cross every T, dot every I. Everything's got to be just right because this is something I can control. So this way I don't have to deal with feeling bad. Or it's risk avoidance, right? We only engage in those things in which we're good at. We only engage in those things that we do well at the expense of creativity and development and growth and all the other things. Yeah, we just do what's comfortable. Or pride. Oh, sometimes the self-exaltation that is presented is just a mirage. It is a front to hide behind fear and insecurity. Or what about procrastination? Procrastination is the avoidance of completing a task because we think maybe we're incompetent, we're underprepared, or we risk being exposed. Good Lord. Whew, guilty of that one right there. Procrastination. Man, and then low motivation. What's interesting about low motivation is that it may appear to be laziness, but in all reality, it's helplessness. No, I'm sorry, not helplessness, hopelessness. Because there's a difference between those two. It's not that I can't be helped. It's that I don't have hope that this could work out. And then the last one is addictions. Like, it's the way in which we numb ourselves to the pain and fear of life. Whether it's alcohol or drugs, whether it's Netflix binging, or super scrolling on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, whatever, Snap, you got it. It's shopping. It's sex. It's all the things that we do to try to numb ourselves from the pain of our life. It's not an exhaustive list, you know, this perfectionism, this risk avoidance, this pride, procrastination, low motivation, and addictions. But what's interesting about all of these is at the core of all of this, this is the base of all of this, is avoidant behaviors based on fear. And so our fears have a way of distorting our reality. We experience discomfort in life, and if we are not careful, we allow fear to distort that for us and take us to unhealthy places. As a matter of fact, Brené Brown says this, sometimes the more uncomfortable learning is the most powerful. The most uncomfortable learning is the most powerful. In other words, when I go through things and I experience discomfort, like, man, I learn. But if I avoid discomfort, then what happens is I avoid the learning. As a matter of fact, we expend so much energy on avoiding discomfort that we rob ourselves of the lessons we can learn from it. We used to tell our sons that struggle is good. They would be struggling with something that was difficult, whether it was schoolwork or a relationship or something in sports or something in life. They were just struggling. And we would say struggle is good. I still believe that struggle is good. In school, we call it productive struggle. It's when I'm working towards mastery of something, I'm working towards getting better at something, and I experience struggle, and I just keep at it because it's getting me closer to the accomplishment of something. And when you determine that you're not going to make any mistakes or that you're going to avoid discomfort, it can paralyze you. So if we're going to learn how to lean into discomfort, then we have to be ready to deal with this last emotion, frustration. Frustration is an interesting emotion because frustration has the ability to hold us hostage to our past. Like frustration is a way that we use pain as a motivation for safety. And what frustration does, if it's not dealt with appropriately, it suppresses our freedom. And frustration is different from anger. I mean, they're different. Frustration is like cooking at low temperature on the stove. It is a simmer, right? It's a simmer. And it happens with unexpected problems that get in the way of us achieving things. It brews slowly beneath the surface. And it always occurs when I don't think I can do anything about a situation, when I don't think I can do anything about a circumstance, or when I think I can't do anything about an occurrence. It's not that it's true that I can't do anything. It's just when I think I can. And so I have to work past my limiting thoughts in order to get to a better management of frustration. Now, anger is different. Anger is like cooking on high temperature, y'all. Yes. Yes. Full on, no stops. It's like it's a much stronger negative emotion. It comes as the result of threat or unfairness or the continuance of frustration. Because, you know, if you let that pot sit on the stove and simmer for a long time, it's going to dry up. It's probably going to catch on fire. It's going to become something more than a slow simmer, right? It becomes something more. And so this is what happens. See, anger, it percolates quickly. It's assertive on the surface. Yeah, sometimes it's verbal assertiveness. Sometimes it's physical assertiveness. Sometimes it's relational assertiveness. And it comes when things challenge our well-being and our values, when we experience injustices. Anger is when I think I can do something about it. I'm ready for action when anger happens. I'm just saying. But frustration is one of the harder ones to deal with, because sometimes we're frustrated because we don't feel like we have control over situations or circumstances in our lives. And frustrations often are led or followed by disappointments and regrets. Yeah. And so when we don't manage our frustrations well, we can easily slip into the blame game, right? We just start blaming ourselves. We start blaming other people. We find something to blame, to make responsible for our feelings. But there's a phrase I want to introduce to you. If you haven't heard it before, it's called frustration tolerance. And frustration tolerance is the inability to tolerate unpleasing feelings or stressful situations. See, it comes from the feeling that my world should go the way I wish it would go, the way I expect it to go, the way I want it to go. And any frustration that comes should go away quickly and easily. Ooh. Here's what we know. Nothing worth having comes easily. But our consumption culture has conditioned us to believe that we can have it all now. No, not now. Right now. We have become conditioned into irrational and unrealistic ways of living. All of these emotions have at their core issues of control. I'm just saying. No matter what you do, you cannot control other people's responses. We really don't even control life. The only person we can control is ourselves. And so, self-regulation is such an important part of what it means to be a mature person. It means that I have the ability to understand and adapt to a variety of environments while managing my emotions and my behaviors. Yep, self-regulation. It's being able to adapt. It's being able to understand what's happening while managing me. Now, people aren't born with this. This is actually a skill. As a matter of fact, young children use the adults or need the adults in their lives to co-regulate them. We help them learn this skill of self-regulation. But as we become adults, we have to take on the ability to self-regulate. And again, it's not a skill that we're born with. And here's what we know about a skill. If it's a skill, then it can be taught. And if it can be taught, it can be learned. And if it can be learned, then it must be practiced. Doesn't happen just because I think it. It has to be practiced. And so it requires flexible thinking. And that's the ability then to set and achieve goals. It's setting my mind so I can think differently about things. I can move from one thing to another mentally. But it also requires the ability to deal with big and uncomfortable feelings in order to cope with uncertainty. Life is uncertain, and I have to be able to deal with it and if I'm going to be good at self-regulation. And here's the last piece. It requires behavior management because sometimes we have to inhibit negative impulses so we can focus on the big picture, the goal, the thing we're after. If I just get caught up in the moment and I just go, then I'm going to miss something important. I'm going to mess something up. Okay. So if self-regulation is important, here is an important tool to self-regulating. It's called emotional granularity. Yep. Emotional granularity. It's an individual's ability to differentiate with specificity their emotions. I know that's a mouthful, right? Specificity. It means that I can identify the different shades of my emotions. Let's put it this way. To the ordinary eye, there is just the color blue. But to an artist, they see indigo and they see cyan. And you see what I'm saying? Like, they see different shades of blue. We have to be able to see the different shades of our emotions. And this skill is helpful in helping us have the right response to situations. Dr. Lisa Feldman Barrett, she's a professor of psychology at Northeastern University, says that our brains, right, are encased in this box, this dark box called the skull. And the way our brains access the world is through our senses, through our sight, our taste, through textures, smells, and sounds, right? And it uses this information to help us figure out what to do next. As a matter of fact, it helps us figure out what's going on, what's happening. Our brain figures that out through our senses. And it does this so that we can be alive and well. Now, she continues that the brain really has to know and determine the difference between, here's the example. If the stomach growl is due to hunger or anxiety. Like, your brain determines that for you. And so the brain is incredible, but here's what happens. It uses past experiences as a tool to solve this problem. In other words, experiences tell your brain what, not what this is, but what it's like. Yeah, that part, what it's like. And so if you have poorly processed pain, and we've talked about that, then this complicates this process, and we inaccurately apply ineffective strategies to the situation. Our brains, right, that uses sensory information so we can know what to do next. I love this other example she gives. She says, if all my brain has to work with is this sucks, then it can take longer to come to a viable solution or response. Like, if that's all you got, man, listen, sometimes what happens is we have been conditioned to use two different crayons, a white one and a black one. And we color our whole life with this red and black crayon. I don't know about you, but I've seen pictures with just a black crayon and just a white crayon. And it's, I mean, it's okay. When there's a whole box of 64 crayons that we get to use. And in our traditional worlds, we have culturized boys to only be able to use two different crayons. And girls, we give them the whole box and say it's okay. I'm telling you, start giving your boys the box of 64. Everybody should have access to a plethora of emotions and expressions of those emotions in ways that are safe and appropriate. And so instead of this sucks, maybe the right response, a more helpful response is, this is frustrating to me. Like, that is such a more useful thought than this sucks. Huh. And so we grow our emotional granularity by exposing ourselves to situations that provoke new emotions. Or we learn new emotion words. Huh. We just learn some. We don't just have mad, sad, bad. Like, we grow some other words. Like, I'm feeling miserable. Oh, I'm elated that we get to do this. I'm so excited. Like, this is going to be an incredible day. And then lastly, we grow this granularity by interacting with people from different cultures or people with different thinking than we have. Like, if everybody around you thinks the same as you, ain't much growth happening. Like, you need some folk who challenge your thinking. It means you intentionally put yourself in some uncomfortable spaces with some people who are different from you so that you can grow. I told you last time, everything you think ain't right. So sometimes you need a broader perspective in order to understand how you ended up in the situations and circumstances of your life. Yeah, you got to see beyond just what you feel. So maybe it's time to let go of your limiting view of what your life should be and begin to embrace what your life could be. Maybe what you have been waiting for, like the life you've been waiting for, the life you've been wanting, maybe so much smaller and less fulfilling than the life that's awaiting you if you just make some different decisions. The author of the book ends his book this way: when life's burdens start to feel too heavy, don't be afraid to put them down for a while. Thanks, Mark. Maybe it's time to go left. I'm Dante Poole, and this is Life Sculptors Podcast, where we help your life take shape. Do me a favor. Like, share, subscribe. Until next time, remember, you are enough.